Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the straight scoop on what it really takes to make the leap from corporate to launching your own coaching or consulting or other service-based business. And as a CEO, being a good steward of your cash is critical to the success of your business. And my guest today is Tricia Tate, the CEO of FinCorp, a boutique outsourced CFO and accounting services company. Tricia is on a mission to help her small business clients reach financial peak performance in their businesses. Tricia is a good friend. She is super smart, well-educated entrepreneur. She graduated from Wharton and has an MBA from Duke. And she's here with us today to share a bit about her entrepreneurial journey over the last 10 years since leaving Wall Street to help small business owners become more savvy with their finances. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Tricia Tate.
Thank you, Deb, for having me here. And thank you to your audience for listening.
I'm so excited to have you because I know you recently hit a big milestone.
Yeah.
That you wrote a new book called Dancing with Numbers. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's publishing in September.
Oh, good, good, good. So tell us about the book and what prompted you to write it.
So Dancing with Numbers was the intention for it was to help people who consider themselves non-numbers people or who don't have business degrees, but they've been in business for a long time. And they're having challenges with managing their financials. And I don't just mean that they don't have the knowledge base, but they might experience it as overwhelmed and stressed. And I fully believe that you can have a fun, engaging, very healthy relationship with your numbers and there are steps to get there. And so Dancing with Numbers, I walk you through the six steps or what I think are the six steps to engage in a healthier, happier relationship with your numbers, because from there, you can grow your business. So that was the initial inspiration. I think the second part of the inspiration of the book was my discovery of some of the challenges that women entrepreneurs particularly face. In 2019, when I heard the statistic from the American Express State of the Women-Owned Business Report that less than 2% of women entrepreneurs get to $1 million, I thought that that was a stark and ridiculous number. And how does that happen? And I'm sure that there are societal norms and injustices that go on that prevent us from getting there. But I also feel that there is probably something internally that's happening. So I started to interview a bunch of women entrepreneurs and ask them directly, what are your financial challenges? What are you trying to achieve? And why is it important? And what I found is that a lot of them lack the knowledge. It's the education that makes them feel unprepared, unconfident, and insecure. And so I felt like providing the knowledge in different ways, through a book, through a program, through my speaking engagements, would be part of the answer to helping women entrepreneurs feel confident, price what they're worth, therefore make more, therefore get towards a higher goal of revenue and ultimately paying themselves more. So the book was also inspired by these conversations that I was having with women entrepreneurs. And I felt like there was an opportunity to teach them and encourage them to have a healthier and better relationship with their numbers through education.
I think that's brilliant. And it's so true that we're woefully unprepared, most of us, as women business owners, to understand the financial aspects of running a business. I know for me, having responsibility for a P&L in corporate before I launched my business was super educational because I wasn't a little bit intimidated about, you know, payroll and expenses for launching and growing a business. So I got that intrapreneurial experience before I made the leap. But even still, it's scary. And I agree with you about the psychology mindset of women in general when it comes to money. We weren't groomed to be householders, head of householders, and yet most women are primary wage earners or head of household. And then you add on the extra responsibility of now being a business owner. And the other statistic from that same report a year later is women are only earning 30 cents to the dollar of revenue as small business owners. So there's a psychology we're undercharging for our services. We undervalue the impact that we're making. So, you know, your book is so timely. Can you share with us one of the six pillars, one of the six takeaways?
I'm going to touch on this mindset piece because I realized in the interviews that is a huge thing. And I don't profess to be a mindset coach. I'm not trying to be a mindfulness coach. I'm a numbers person. But I was trying to think, how do I take the emotion out of getting people to act and to move? But when I was doing research for the book, I found something called financial therapy and the Financial Therapy Association. And it works through people's money beliefs and destructive money habits that you form in childhood that people bring into their adult life and therefore carry into their business. So in the first few chapters, I talk about going back to the past and looking at your childhood. And everyone I interviewed, there are inspired stories throughout the book because I wanted readers to connect to the subject matter in a way that was digestible. And storytelling is the best way to do that. So I interviewed a bunch of business owners who are seasoned, who have been in business over 5 years, because that is who the book is geared towards. And I asked them all, what is your first experience with money? What is your childhood story around money? And various people, even people that had a Wharton MBA, had interesting childhood situations with money. And that was inspiring and informative to me because I grew up a first generation American. My maternal grandmother was very financially savvy. And she taught all of her children and grandchildren to be financially independent and about home ownership and savings and investing. So I already grew up with that mindset. And I assumed everyone had that mindset until I was 20 something and I was working at Citigroup. And Citigroup sponsored this program where we taught financial literacy curriculum to adults in the area. And there was this woman there, we were talking about debt management or credit management. She was old enough to be my mother and she didn't know some basic things. And that blew my mind. That moment stays with me and is part of what I see is my purpose is to bring financial freedom and independence to women and now to women entrepreneurs. So I know I said a lot of things, but the first thing in the chapter is talking about going back into your childhood and investigating the source of these destructive money habits and money scripts that stop you and prevent you. And then the second one, just give you a little insight, but the second one is leveraging entrepreneurship as an opportunity, seeing it as an opportunity and a pathway to resolving some of those things. Because entrepreneurship is going to throw you into all your areas of discomfort, no matter what they are. But in order to dance with your numbers, and this is where the metaphor of like my passion for dance comes in, is that entrepreneurship comes in like the person that invites you to the dance floor and you're hesitant because you're like, what if people look at me? What if I trip? What if I'm not so good? So it's the person that invites you into the dance. That's what I see entrepreneurship as. And it introduces you to a pathway and an opportunity to start to unravel some of those destructive mindsets and go to a place where you're happier and more engaged.
Wow, your experience is so powerful. And how fortunate to have a grandmother who imbued this financial education in you at such a young age. And so you didn't grow up with a lot of the hangups that a lot of your clients have. So, and I think it's brilliant too, to start right off with, you know, let's clear some of those mindset issues, because unless you get those out of the way, then nothing else is going to work going forward. And it's true. I mean, in many ways, I say entrepreneurship is a spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. You have to shed your past asked to become who you really are on this path of self-expression, because that's what it is. It's like dancing. So now I want to go into your background, you know, because I think our listeners will be very interested to hear more about that. I remember when you were in the Launch Lab and we had this, you know, epiphany experience that, wait a minute, Trisha was a dancer on Broadway. What? And here, you know, she's got this straight financial presence and this gravitas and seriousness about her. And then you just rebranded and you brought it all together. So tell us about your background. Did you ever imagine that you would go from dancing to Wall Street to entrepreneurship? And what was that like?
I had no idea. Entrepreneurship was happenstance. I shared with you guys that I'm a first generation American. And so my parents are from Trinidad and Tobago. And when everybody came to this country, they came for education and stayed in jobs 30, 40 plus years. And that's the path that I knew. I was great at math. I am a self-proclaimed math nerd. I'm okay with that. And I thought math equaled finance. So when I applied to colleges, I applied to all the colleges in the Northeast that had strong business programs. I came to find out that math doesn't equal finance. Finance is a completely different subject. Wharton was a heck of an experience at that age in your life, 18. I was like, why was I so serious? I was so serious.
So serious.
I still am. But I have always been passionate about dance ever since junior high school. And for those listeners out there who come from Caribbean background, or many who have come from immigrant background, when you come to this country, your parents came to this country, dance is not considered a full-time job. You have to be a lawyer, a doctor, an engineer, or an accountant. So because I was good at math, I went into business. My dad is a CPA. My godfather is a CPA. They weren't the influencers, but it kind of felt natural, but I never lost the love for dance. I was trained in African dance and modern dance in college. And so I followed the herd. I went to Wall Street. I worked at Merrill Lynch. I was like, what do I do next? Okay, go back to business school. That's what everyone else is doing. So I went to business school. After business school, I was like, I want to try finance in someplace sexy like Gap or Victoria's Secret or Google. And then I went back to Wall Street. And when I was there, during those 2 years, I knew it wasn't it. I knew, but I didn't know how to jump off the treadmill. In fact, after business school, I got the opportunity to dance full-time with a company in North Carolina with a dance legend named Chuck Davis. And I asked Citigroup to defer my first year after business school, and they allowed me to.
Wow.
And that was the first time in my whole life, late 20s, that I was dancing full-time, like 9 to 5. I cut off my hair. I mean, I think it was definitely an evolutionary experience when I look back on it. I call them the tectonic plates of life. So every few years, I don't know if it happens for anyone else, life sort of shifts and changes. And if you are a type A person and you like to be in control, when that happens, you don't feel comfortable. I've learned now that it's okay. It means something new is happening. But at the time, I was like, what the heck is happening? I don't know, but I'm going to go with it. So I regained this love and passion for dance. And when I was at Citigroup, I knew this wasn't it, but the recession hit. The Great Recession hit in 2009. Everyone that I know in bank and broker dealer companies were laid off. And during this layoff, I was like, what am I going to do? Oh my God, my six-figure job. But at the same time, I started taking dance classes during the day. What am I going to do with my time? I'm going to take dance classes. And I realized that's when the professionals take classes. The amateurs or people who want to be fit, which is most of us, take it in the evening. The professionals, the ALE dancers, everyone else is taking it during the day. So I got bit by that bug and I said, okay, at this stage in my life, late 20s, early 30s, if I'm going to try to do something big in dance, I have to do it now because the body starts to age out, or they consider you quote unquote old in the dance world. So I started auditioning for Broadway. I had no musical theater experience. I had some dance experience. I said, Trisha, I'm going to do this. So I spent hours upon hours. Anybody who's tried to audition in New York knows if you are not equity, you get there 3-4 o'clock in the morning. You might stay there all day just to be seen for 15 seconds. And there's a lot of no's. and it's an expensive thing to pursue, and you need flexibility in your schedule. So to stay flexible, what I started to do is I became trained in Pilates because I injured myself and I learned Pilates and I loved it. So I became a YMCA Pilates instructor. I became an Equinox Pilates private instructor for a couple of years. And then I was introduced to consulting for performing arts companies. They knew I knew numbers and I loved dance, and they needed support with budgeting and projecting and financial analysis. And so I started to do one-off consulting and get engagements because people knew that I had this other skill. And that turned into my understanding of small business issues. They were, you know, $1 million, $500,000, $5 million budgets. And I had been accustomed to analyzing P&Ls for like business units. It's Citigroup, which is completely different. So I went back because I realized it was different, and you had to know the nuts and bolts of accounting. You had to know the nuts and bolts of payroll. What are the issues that small businesses deal with? I took a couple of professional certificate courses at some local colleges just to get it, you know, get it into my system. And I started freelance consulting. That's how it all started. And as a way to pay for dance, the pursuit of dance. And I gave myself 5 years. I ultimately got a Broadway gig with the musical Fela. And I was on tour. And after I completed that, I got my Actors Equity Association card. So I am a union member. And I also continued dancing with a company in New York called Forces of Nature, which I have now been with for 15 years. And I still love to dance professionally. So I realized in that time, there was no one else that I knew that had these two very different interests and passions. And it was scary at first to figure out, how do I pursue both? Because I am both people. When I take the Myers-Briggs and any of these other kind of assessments, I am high on creative and I am high on technical. And what I realized and learned, and I didn't appreciate this until last year, so my fifth year in business, I felt like by expressing all of who I was, other people would be confused. I was concerned about what other people thought, but I was fully living two lives, that of a dancer and that of a full-on financial professional. And I realized that one informs the other, and it's all of who I am, and it's my differentiator, and it's how I bring myself to my clients. So my clients like love me because I make things digestible, I make things understandable, I bring fun to it, and I think, and I credit that to my performance quality and my expressiveness through dance. So that is how I became an entrepreneur. Like after I got off tour with Fela, I was like, okay, girl, we're not going back to corporate. So what are we going to do?
Yeah, what are we going to do? And, you know, I love that story because it's true that as an entrepreneur, you bring all of you to the table. It's like all of your past experience. It's your origin story, where you grew up, how you got to where you are, your corporate experience, the arts, whatever your interests are. And that's so super important because that's your differentiator. I mean, when you were just positioning yourself before you rebranded to FinCorp, it was too much like, how do you differentiate yourself from one fractional CFO to another? It's getting to be a crowded category, especially now with people leaving corporate. And now with this conversation that we've just had and you've pulled it all together, now we see what makes Tricia Tate different from others. And would love to hear a little bit more from you about what have been some of the biggest lessons that you have learned along the way as an entrepreneur. Where have you been stretched? Where have you had to work on your mindset? Or what has that been like for you?
I would start at the beginning and then go to the middle. So at the beginning, it was just understanding what it means to be a small business owner. When you're transitioning from corporate, it's a completely different mindset. Even if you have business background, experience, being a small business owner responsible for bringing in every dollar and everything else is a whole nother world. So in order to get into it, I joined small business communities so that I could be around other business owners, so that I knew what I should be figuring out. right? So I would say that that was a huge lesson in the beginning, especially for those of you who are transitioning from corporate. Find small business communities that are going to teach you things and where you could find camaraderie and community. The second lesson is very important to me, to figure out how to bring my whole self to the business. I knew that I wanted to be like in this financial analytical position. An outsourced CFO was not a popular term 5 years ago. So it was hard to sell because I had to educate people and then convert them into clients, which I would never do again.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't do again. So figuring out, I think in the fifth year, the lesson there was like how to bring my whole self. Another lesson was sales. I love numbers and spreadsheets. I wasn't a natural salesperson, a marketing person. And I don't know why it took 5-6 years for me to understand that I just need marketing standpoint. I just need to say the thing that the people want. What is their pain point? They communicated it to me. Just say it right back to them. Like it just didn't click. And then it clicked. You want to understand performance? I help you understand performance. You want someone to sit with you and strategize? I sit with you and help you strategize. The messaging is so much easier. I don't have to come up with some ingenious.
No, you don't have to come up with it, you know? I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, too many people make it so overcomplicated. And because it's scary when you first make the leap, and because there's so much that you don't know, it's easy to go out there and consume a lot of content and take a lot of courses that you really don't need. And, you know, one of the reasons why I launched the Launch Lab was because I knew from my product development days in corporate that you interview people, you have conversations with them, you find out where they're struggling, you find out where they want to be. And that's key to how you communicate to your market, to your people. And yeah. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. What were some of the other ways that you started? So how did you solve the sales thing? Like, how did you get comfortable with sales?
My performance self kicked in. It kicked in a way that I just started having honest conversations. Like, I ask people questions when I'm prospecting, and when they start revealing things to me, I start sharing with them experiences I've had with other clients, and then they start connecting, and then it's not a sales call anymore. It's a conversation, and I end up giving advice, which is why now I'm going to charge for my consultations, but it ended up becoming conversations. And because I come from a place of wanting to give and service leadership, I end up talking to them about that exact pain point. And like I said, then the conversion becomes easier. And in some conversations, I'm super frank. I'm like, you know, you have this problem. You know, you need to pay for this person. So when you're ready, you can give me a call. I would have never done that in the beginning because you feel like you need every conversation to turn into a client. And not all people are clients. And for the moment, they might be clients a year from now. I've had many people come back to me after a year or two. I wanted to touch on something that was really a stretch for me.
Sure.
Which was hiring.
Mm.
And not hiring because I feel like I have to do it all. But I wasn't accustomed to asking for help until my time became my most precious resource. And I started to think of, I think the book, The Big Leap, where he talks about your zone of genius, your zone of incompetence, zone of competence, right? A zone of excellence. And I put my things in that bucket. It was the first time I looked at, wait a minute, I don't need to do the bookkeeping. Why am I doing? I can do it, but I don't need to be doing it. It would free up so much time. And so in the past year, it was a place of discomfort. I have a couple of places, that and adopting new technology. But entrepreneurship always forces you into places of discomfort. I started to identify with people's discomfort with the finances in my own discomforts as a business owner. I was like, oh, that's what that feels like, procrastination. Oh, that's what that feels like. You feel overwhelmed, stressed, I'm scared. That's what that feels like for people with financials. The hiring at the beginning felt that way for me. It felt very uncomfortable, especially since I'm dealing with people's numbers, their private information, and it's a very emotional part of their business. But now I'm bringing on CFOs to lead the client relationship. And I'm like, who do I have to become?
Right.
In order to hire, I have to become trusting. I have to become more of a CEO who is not necessarily in the weeds of doing, but orchestrating. I have to become a choreographer.
Wow. All right. I just want to, you know, mic drop moment right there. I just got chills because you named it. You named it. You claimed it. It's the scary piece of stepping into the she you need to be as CEO. And I love that as choreographer, bringing your dance in of choreographing the business. You're not just dancing by yourself because then you'll just be exhausted. You'll collapse. You won't reach your financial goals. You won't make the impact that you want to make through your work. You need a team. You need a team.
That's right.
Wow. This is such a rich conversation. And there's one more piece of ground that I want to cover before we leave our listeners today, because you and I have had many conversations about women and money, about undercharging for services, not paying themselves. You know, you did a webinar recently about how to pay yourself more and something like that. So what have you done to turn the tables on the financial conversation with your women business owners around pricing their services or paying themselves more?
So the interviews that I told you I conducted after I listened to that study helped reveal what are some of the most popular financial challenges I hear with established women entrepreneurs. And then when I asked them, well, why are you having these challenges? What would you like to achieve? And at the core of it was they wanted to pay themselves more. And I said, why is that important? Because I want to contribute to my household, because I want to retire comfortably, because I want to leave a legacy, because I want to give to my community in a meaningful way. I said, okay, well, how do I help? How is that possible? So the way to pay yourself more and hire people, that was the second most important thing to them, and invest in the people that you have, you need profits. And I just thought about that mathematically. Yeah, you need profits. You need more cash in the business so you could do the things. But then I turned the profits into an acronym. And then the acronym became a course. It became a program. And the Dancing with Numbers, so creating Dancing with Numbers, the book and the course at the same time, in the past couple of years, has been a wonderful journey because the goal is the same. It's to help people ultimately pay themselves more. Yeah, you want to grow, you want to scale, you want to gain profits, but for why? Why is that important? And ultimately, these women entrepreneurs want to pay themselves more. So I've created a program called The Path to Financial Freedom, and because that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, that's what I want to see people achieve. And I feel like in that number they gave, 12 million women entrepreneurs, there's 1 million of us that are stuck in the six figures. I say stuck because I feel like it is possible for you to jump over this milestone or get to whatever that milestone is. So how do I get you there? And it's a six-step process. Kind of like the Dancing with Numbers, but I'm a mathematical person, so of course it's a process. And what's important, what leads you into Path to Financial Freedom is the masterclass that you talked about. It's called the Pay Yourself More Masterclass. And I've been using different tools, different spreadsheets, simple calculations to move people into a place of just seeing the math behind it so we could take away the emotion. Once the program evolves, I would love to have a financial therapy person or a mindset person. So I'm not a mindset coach, but I believe that it's a very critical part of the whole equation. But my first attempt at it is using group conversation, one-on-one calls, just this having this community of sharing your financial struggles and providing solutions to each other is very helpful. These worksheets and calculators have been proven to be very helpful. So that program is going to relaunch in the fall, in the fourth quarter. The book is going to come out in September. So I am looking forward to a wonderful, evolved next year, this year into next year with FinCorp, with the book. And I feel like I am way more connected to my purpose. Like I could see the horizon. I don't know how I'm going to get all the way to the horizon, but I do want to take at least 10,000 women over that hump.
Yes.
With this program.
You are going to skyrocket, my friend. I can feel it. I can see it. You have the perfect foundation in place. Messaging platform, the book, which leads to the course. And I can't wait to support you through all of that. And so excited that you spent time with us here today. So thank you.
thank you for holding the space, and thank you for the work that you do, because you've been impactful in my life on this journey of searching for what's next. So yeah, thank you for all that you do for those of us who were on the corporate treadmill.
That's right. Well, your story, I think, will resonate so much with our listeners today. So how do we keep in touch with you? How do we get the book or pre-order the book? How do people follow you or even schedule a call if they'd like to learn more about working directly with you?
All right. So I'm going to give you two places. I'm going to give you the current website and then the new website in case they're in transition. Current website is artofmoneymatters.com. That's the same thing on Instagram. I'm available on LinkedIn under Tricia M. Tate. But artofmoneymatters.com is the place where you can find more information, book a call, all the things. We are moving to FinCore Strong. So that's FinCore Strong.com. And that's where you'll be also able to find out where we're going. You'll get access to the book, the wait list, the subscription wait list for the book. You'll find out more about the path to financial freedom and more about my story with my grandmother, because I wanted to bring it all to you. You'll see some color. You'll see dancers flying through the thing, like the website. I'm excited.
I am so excited for you. I really am. And it's just, you know, you've come alive the last year. You really have come alive. And it's been beautiful to witness. And I wish you all the success in the world, my friend. The world needs you.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate this. And have a wonderful, amazing entrepreneurial journey to all the listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's it for now, my friends. We will see you next time. Take care. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.